the sleep, but not the dream. Things ain't cooking in my kitchen. Strange affliction wash over me. Julius Caesar and the Roman Empire.
Computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Well, welcome to a Wednesday. We've made it to a Wednesday. I'm not so sure we'll make it to a Thursday or a Friday. Actually, I know that this show won't. I am Nicole Sandler, and you know, I come to you from South Florida. I'm in a town called Coral Springs, and we're very close to the Everglades. And we're still trying to figure out what to do about Irma. Irma, the either the largest or the second largest storm ever in the Atlantic basin, they say, is bearing down. It's hitting the Leeward Islands. It's going to hit Puerto Rico and go over Cuba. And once it gets over Cuba, the question is, when does it turn right? They know it's going to turn right and head up to hit the U.S. The question is, where in Florida? And, you know, Florida is one long peninsula. Down here on the south end, there's not really too many places we can go except north. The problem is the storm is so massive that it covers the entire state. So we've been looking at, you know, we've got a dog. Flights out of South Florida right now are prohibitively expensive, if you can even find one. And again, we've got the dog. So we looked at hotels in the Orlando area. The thing is, Orlando could get hit as hard as we do. Now it's looking like the latest advisory, which came down about an hour ago, says the storm is tracking a little further to the east. So if it goes up the east coast of Florida, and we are on the east coast of Florida, it's west of the ocean, thankfully, but still on the east coast. So we're thinking maybe go a little further northwest. David's in the other room looking to find what kind of either vacation rentals or hotel rooms we can find, and we're trying to figure it out. Then there's the question of my daughter and her job. She works at a mall. And, you know, you got to figure the malls will be closed. But when I called the mall this earlier today, they said they will not make a decision on that until either tropical storm warnings or hurricane warnings are issued. Oh, and there are gas stations without gas along I-75. Yeah, see, that's the question. So we can drive and hope that one tank of gas will get us where we're going, because we don't even have a full tank of gas. Most of the gas stations are out of gas. So that's another danger of running out of gas and not being able to fill up. See, there's we figure, okay, here's a solution, and then there's a roadblock to the solution. Anyway, I will not be doing a show tomorrow or Friday, because even if we wind up staying here, there's a lot of shoring up of the house to do with such a massive storm coming our way. So I'm sorry. I know I just got back from vacation, and I'm going to have to take another, hopefully, only couple of days off. Let's hope I'm back on Tuesday. But I know you'll bear with us. Some things are more important than radio. Not many, but some. All right, we've got a very, very busy show for today. And in fact, we're going to start with someone who just weathered a storm. Dana Steele worked with the world's greatest rock stars as a Hall of Fame rock radio personality in Houston. I knew her name when I was just sort of when I was doing the same kind of thing in Los Angeles. She's done so much more. She created the first NASA online retail operation, becoming an executive with a NASA aerospace contractor. Since that time, she's become a popular business success speaker and the author of 8 books. Yeah, she lives in Seabrook, Texas, with her former NASA pilot husband and their 3 sons. Dana Steele is currently running to be the first congresswoman for the Texas 36th Congressional District. ABC News has called Dana's advice ridiculously sane. Oh, boy, that's what we need in government, please. Today, we need ridiculously sane. Dana Steele, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining me today.
That critique always makes me laugh. I mean, it's just, I love that.
Well,
ridiculously sane.
Perfect. We, as I said, that's exactly what we need in this time of such insanity. Now, Dana, how far is Seabrook from Houston?
It is a suburb of Houston. So we were in the thick of Harvey. We live on a small lake down near NASA. We lived in the lake for about 3 days.
Oh boy!
We took about three feet of water. But the main part of our house is upstairs. I always joke that downstairs is my son's bedroom, and it needed to be cleaned. This was a very frightening storm in that we knew we were going to flood. We knew it was probably going to be 1 to 3 feet. We were able to get everything upstairs. It wasn't going to be a wind event. But then it just kept raining to the point we couldn't go more than a mile or so in any direction. We couldn't leave. So you just sat and you waited. At one point I realized I hadn't had a shower for 7 days. I'm like, what have I been doing for 7 days?
Oh my God.
But now you guys are getting ready to get it. So, and all of my relatives are in Miami. So I'm thinking about you.
Now, what are your relatives doing? Because I'm in Coral Springs. I'm in Broward County. I'm in like a northwestern Broward. And we're torn. The problem is that the predictions of the track that Irma is going to take are all over the place. So we don't really know. And it's not like we can shoot out in any direction. We have one way to go. It's up, and we either move sort of to the west or to the east.
Right. Most of them have, I say most of them, a good contingent of them just, they all work for the same company, so they shut the company down, they packed up, and they took the kids to Disneyland, although I think it's, or Disney World, I think it's going to be raining there. They may keep going. A few have decided to just board up and, as we say in Texas, hunker down.
Right.
And, you know, they've lived there three generations, so several of them. Some of them, you know, it was a couple of generations in Cuba. So they're used to this, but it's just such a, it's a crazy storm. I woke up this morning with the strangest thought. Every time Trump does something stupid, we get a hurricane. He needs to stop.
Well, no, then we would have had about 50 of them by now. So
it's
not every time. So Dana Steele, I'm so happy to talk with you, and I'm glad that you at least weathered the storm relatively well. You know, everything is relative these days, I suppose. Howie Klein told us about you a couple of weeks ago, and of course, I was familiar with you, after being a rock radio disc jockey for so many years, because you were legendary in the Houston area. And now you've thrown your hat in the ring. You are running for Congress from Texas's 36th congressional district. What does that encompass?
Yes, it is. It is nine counties, which have now been all nine declared federal disaster areas.
Oh boy!
It is all of Southeast Texas. It's bigger than the state of Connecticut. I have more people than Denver or Seattle, 731,000. It's an extremely red district, so much so that the last election, no Democrat even ran.
Wow.
And when I discovered that, it made me mad. That's not democracy. People should not be afraid to say, I'm a Democrat. People should not be afraid to say, I'm going to run or I'm going to vote for a Democrat. So the more I looked into this, my rep, who I really had not heard of, and I figured out why, because he doesn't go to anywhere or talk to anyone, I go back to the way you introduced me. I was a very highly rated, well-known, long-time rock radio DJ in the area. My signal went all the way up into my district. And my husband and I just looked at each other one night, you know, as this 2016 election started to take shape. We would just, you know, every night we'd sit down at 6 and we'd look at each other and go, God, what happened today? This is insane. And it became more and more and more politics to the point my husband just literally looked at me one night, Nicole, and he said, you know you could do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
They know you. They still love you. They recognize your name. Even Republicans will let you in their house.
Right.
And so we did a couple of fact-finding missions up into the district. We went to a few diners. We went to a few honky-tonks. And sure enough, when I told people I was running as a Democrat, they would physically turn their body and walk off.
Oh, no.
But then they would look at my card, and these 48-year-old, you know, white Trump voters would turn around and turn into 16-year-old boys and come over and say, can I hug you?
Wow.
And that's when I knew I have an in here. I have an in, and I really care about these people. I grew up in the area.
Sure. And they grew up with you, and that's the whole thing. When you have that kind, and radio is a very personal relationship. It's a one-on-one thing. A lot of people don't really, it's very much, much more personal than television, because people are alone with you in their car, in the shower, you know, whatever they're doing. It is that personal thing, and I'm not surprised you get that kind of reaction. I know you're a progressive.
I was going to tell you real quick, I had a program director, and I use this in business now, and I teach it to people. He would hotline me anytime I said, you know, outside, where you are, in your car, all of us, all of you.
Uh-huh.
He would say, remember, no matter how many people you're talking to, they
one
all
person.
Have one heart, one soul,
yep.
one brain, and
yep.
one set of ears. Always talk as if you're talking to Christy, your best friend.
That's right. That was one of the best pieces of advice I ever got. You're talking to one person, that one person, because radio people do listen alone for the most part.
And so I just decided, you know, I've always loved politics and been fascinated and loved, you know, talking politics behind closed doors. But it was not something I did in business and didn't do on the air, because you're going to alienate a lot of your audience. But also, I was a rock and roll DJ in the 80s. Enough said. And when Trump was elected, I was like, well, if he can be president, I can be congresswoman.
Without a doubt.
Actually run successful businesses that did not go bankrupt.
That's good to know. Dana Steele is with us. By the way, the website is Dana with a Y, Steele with an E at the end, danasteele36.com for the 36th District in Texas. If you go there right now, there's a lot of Harvey information, which obviously that's, you know, right now our attention is turned to Irma. And for good reason, especially where I'm sitting. Does it feel like you guys have been sort of forgotten already now that the rain has stopped and the waters have receded a bit?
You know, not yet. Not yet. But there is that fear. But they have announced a huge telethon for us on television next week. So that's going to be happening. J.J. Watt, our star football player, set out to raise $200,000, and today he announced it's already at $27 million. So, you know, the power of social media, power of people, I'm not real sure what the federal government's going to do and how much of that money we're going to see, but just the sheer power. I put my entire campaign on hold to do nothing but the first few days, I was literally giving addresses and phone numbers of where people were on their roofs or scared they were drowning in their homes. I mean, we just did nothing. And just the power of social media in this storm, we're now using it to people source teams to help muck out houses. So I recommend do the same with Irma because it was an incredible way to help people. Hmm. For anybody who does follow politics, though, this presents a whole new challenge for me. Not only is it a big district, a red district, and I'm not a politician, but now half of my district is scattered to the winds, literally. They're in shelters.
Ooh.
Their homes have been destroyed. This is going to be a bizarre election. I don't know how people are going to vote, where they're going to vote. Half of my precinct chairs have left because their houses were destroyed. It's going to be interesting. I can't fundraise, and you know how important fundraising is to us.
Oh yeah,
a candidate. I can't fundraise. There is not any way I can ask people for money for me when it looks like a war zone a mile from my house.
Sure, and you need so much money, and so much more than has already been promised by the federal government. They're talking about the most expensive storm in history. I get there's going to be a lot of challenges, and then once you get in. A lot of hard work because it's going to be about rebuilding for years to come in Houston.
Right. But you know what? Hard work has never scared me. You know, I was told you could never be on the radio and you'll never get the good shift and you'll never make the money the guys make. And yeah. No. So that part doesn't scare me. What scares me is what's going to be left for me to fix, you know, with everything that's still 16 months away.
Right.
And it terrifies me. What are they going to do? You know, will all the immigrants be gone? Will women have no more rights? Will there be no civil rights? It's just bizarre watching this dismantling. So, yes, I got a really interesting, not hard task. I call it an interesting task in front of me. But we're having a lot of team meetings right now going, what do we do? And I think it's going to be just getting out, boots on the ground, literally. That's what I wear. And got myself a pickup truck, and I think I'm just going to have to drive around and see where people are, what their needs are, because it's totally different than what I planned on doing 2 weeks ago.
Right. Well, you got to roll with the changes, I suppose. Dana Steele, I hope once we get past the storm here and there, I'll have you back on for a longer discussion. We can talk about issues. I just wanted to get you on, see how you fared in the storm, say hello. You know, Howie and I, Howie's usually on with me every Thursday. I had to cancel on him for tomorrow because I'm not even doing a show tomorrow because I'm going to be getting ready for the storm. As soon as he mentioned you, it's like, of course I know Dana Steele. Yes, I would love to have her on the show. So I'm glad people could meet you. Again, the website is danasteele36.com. I will have a link from my blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's podcast. And let's talk again soon once the waters and the winds clear. Out.
All right. You be safe, please.
Thank you so much. Great talking
with
you.
Take care. Talk
care. Bye-bye. All right. I told you it's a busy day today, and we are welcoming back some old friends. The Talk Media News Service is going to be giving us reports each day, or at least Wednesdays through Fridays. And I believe on the line now we've got Doug Christian. Is that you, Doug?
It sure is.
Well, hi. It's nice to meet you. We have not spoken before.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Definitely.
So I was just speaking with Dana Steele, who lives in Houston. She's running for Congress from the 36th District. And, you know, I don't know if you know that I'm in South Florida. You must have just heard me say it. We're getting ready to take a hit from Irma. So it is hurricane season in full swing right now.
Well, the hurricanes are speaking of global warming, whether people want to deny it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing the results of increased energy in these storm systems. I'm sorry that you will have to survive this, but I hope I survive this. Yeah,
that would be a good thing.
The trouble is that these storm systems are so powerful. I mean, the Category 5 hurricane, however, it's not just the wind velocity, which is the strength of a tornado over a 60-mile radius, but more importantly, it's actually the storm surge, because, for instance, with the tropical storm Sandy, which was a Category 1 hurricane at times, it was the flooding that hit everybody in Florida that always the case.
They're telling us this is going to be more of a wind event than Harvey, which was a rain event. But winds up right now at 185 miles per hour, it's unheard of. I happen to be here in South Florida when Hurricane Andrew hit. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, but visiting my dad, who was an invalid, and we couldn't leave. And it was one of the most frightening nights of my life. This is putting Andrew that, you know, it's making that look like, oh, just a little storm. I guess not so much, but, this is much bigger, much more powerful, both in size and in scope, in wind speed and everything else. If people want to say, you know, deny that climate change has something to do with it, then they're living in denial.
Exactly right. I mean, these hurricanes are loudly speaking to us that this is not something that we can put down the road decades out, but something we have to address now, today. And unfortunately, low-lying areas such as in Houston or Florida, where you live in Coral Gables, is it?
No, Coral Springs. I'm in Broward
Coral
County.
Springs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's ground zero for this.
Yeah,
stuff.
we're right by the Everglades. I think Coral Springs used to be part of the Everglades. So we're low. We're sitting low.
Wow.
Next to the water table. So it is frightening, and we're still trying to figure out if we try to leave. Again, there's only one direction we can go, but we head northwest or northeast. And right now, the latest, the 2 o'clock advisory, said that the storm was looking like it's tracking a little further to the east. So we're thinking, all right, maybe we go northwest and head towards the Tampa Bay area. Or do we just stay put? And there's no science. You know, I was thinking earlier, I lived in Los Angeles for many years, and I lived through the Northridge earthquake. I went through the Northridge earthquake and Hurricane Andrew the same year. And I think the earthquake was easier because we didn't have days to worry about it. And it was over in less than a minute, you know, but they're both terrifying.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, an earthquake is terrifying, but it does. It only lasts, you know, for the time of the earthquake itself, and then it would damage afterward. But a hurricane, whew,
yep.
I mean, one of the things that's crazy, and you've probably read about this recently, is that, for instance, the one area of Florida that hasn't really been hit full throttle with a hurricane for years is the Tampa Bay and Pinellas uh-huh. County area.
Uh-huh.
They say that area is so vulnerable, though, due to low-lying lands, that on when it does get hit, which it eventually will, that it will be terrible.
Yeah, and we can, you know, thanks to the climate change, we and just this year as a prime example, we can probably expect more and more of these thousand-year storms. This is scary. And behind Irma is there's another hurricane. I'm losing the J hurricane.
Yeah, you're right.
Jose, I believe it is. And then there's Katia forming behind Jose. So this, you know, we're at the height of hurricane season. So I guess all we can do is keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Oh.
And really kind of advocate for policy that really that alters this course of global warming, which is global warming isn't quite the right term. I mean, it's global chaos. It's more energy in the system.
And we have a president who won't admit that it's real, who pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accord. So, you know, we're just really screwed on this front. I don't know what it'll take to get through his thick head.
Well, I mean, this is why people at the very basic level have to vote. I mean, you know, that's because if people don't vote, they're voting by not voting.
Yes. Well, that's what they did in 2016, that's for sure. So what else is going on besides these crazy storms?
Well, we, of course, are toying with, on the home front, of course, very tragically, the DACA push and pull that's been going on, where you have immigration hardliners who don't even want to hear of the sympathetic stories of dreamers who have lived here all their life. This is their home, and somehow they're not eligible to live here because they weren't born here.
Right. Well, Trump did an interesting thing last night. He tweeted out, "If Congress is unwilling to address DACA, I'll have to revisit it." Which, you know,
isn't that crazy? In other words, could he do exactly what President Obama had done, which was when he tried to work out something with Congress, it wouldn't work. He issued an executive order. I mean, could that be the same? Could he end up reversing and doing the same thing?
It looks like he may be
using it as a bargaining chip, which is very sad in itself because people are put into an uncertain situation in the meantime.
Yeah, using it as a bargaining chip for his idiotic wall. Meanwhile, Trump today reached a deal with the Democrats to avert a fiscal crisis.
That was hilarious. I mean, you had the establishment Republicans who really are loathed the idea that they would have to raise the debt ceiling twice or address the budget twice because it doesn't really play well with the base. But the Democrats, most establishment people want the government just to kind of stream forward. And the Democrats said, okay, sure, we'll go for a shorter term situation. This agreement would go until December, which really puts the establishment Republicans into a bind because then they have to speak back to their base as to why they voted twice for raising the debt ceiling.
Right. The fact that Trump had to do it with the Democrats' help and without the Republicans on board. There's this burgeoning war between Trump and the congressional Republicans, which is not going to help him further his agenda, which is fine with me. Everything about this man is just stupefying.
He is a stupefying character. There is no doubt about it. He's always been somewhat of a conundrum, even in the New York real estate market. And in some ways, though, I mean, he has figured out something which is correct, and that is that one would be crazy not to talk with the minority party, whoever the minority party is, and try to work out deals. So in that sense, I mean, he's, I mean, that's a better thing than to try to just ignore the minority party altogether, which he's tried to do with health care reform.
With everything so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is he loves calling them the obstructionist Democrat party. Meanwhile, with ignoring what the Republicans did for the last 8 years, right, where they obstructed every single thing. How's he going to he's not going to be able to use that line anymore, because when push comes to shove and something needed to get done, the Democrats were there.
Exactly. And I mean, Chuck Schumer is a savvy operator in Washington, and he understands that certain people have, and he has a long memory, and I think Donald Trump realizes, President Trump realizes that you know, if he's going to get things done, it's not going to be just through his own party, who he's also attacked, which is mystifying in itself.
I hear you. Any news on North Korea or anything else going on we need to know about?
Well, I mean, it looks like there's going to be another test coming up real soon, which is, I mean, this is the weird thing is that South Korea has lived with this kind of provocative belligerence for decades. And now, though, that the North Koreans have really upped their game in both their technological skills and missile capability as well as nuclear explosive capability, it's put everybody on notice. The bottom line, and I guess the thing that very few people are willing to say, Secretary of Defense James Mattis did say it at one point, he admitted it, but he doesn't speak about it too much right now, is that the only way to really resolve this is to go to the diplomatic table, because any armed struggle would lead to devastation.
Yes.
Almost immediately. So, I mean, in a sense, that's the only line. And now the question is how to get there. And, I mean, it's a very complicated game, because there are people that are trading with North Korea that may not want to be trading with North Korea, but also are in a bind. And there's also another problem, and that is that North Korea is put into a straitjacket in its economic sanctions. It will turn around and sell to even regimes that are even worse than North Korea, such as ISIS. And, there could be nothing more scary than Al Qaeda or ISIS getting nuclear weapons.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah. So
and this
problem actually happened before. In fact, when the Russians, when the Soviet Union was imploding, there was actually the Carnegie Endowment for Peace actually offered a study saying, "Hey, listen, this is not good that the military-industrial complex that has been supporting the USSR is now freelancing and going to sell nukes on the open market to the world. It would be much better for it to go to a regime that we may not like, but we know who they are, and they're not going to do something crazy."
Well, we have a leader who does things crazy on a daily basis, who doesn't seem to understand the scope of the things he says and does, which is what's the most frightening part about it.
It truly is. And I mean, I do. The weird thing is that he puts into question so much about our process right now. Not just because of his spontaneous behavior, not really thinking things out, not studying what's going on, but also in terms of just our relationship with our allies and how we deal constructively with the world. We're not just ourselves anymore.
No, nope. Ah, Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Thank you for the report. It's nice talking with you. It's good to have you guys back on the air. It's been a while, and I wish we had better news to talk about, and we could have some fun.
We will. Fortunately, there's always tomorrow, and one of the good things about when you reach a nadir is there's only one way to go, and that is up.
Yes, well, that's true. All right. Doug, thank you so much.
It was a real pleasure.
For me, too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. There you go. Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service. They'll be with us Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Tuesdays, we hang with Laffy, and we'll just leave it at that. In case you missed it earlier, I will not be here tomorrow or Friday because we have a hurricane coming our way. Thank you, Trumantown, in the chat room, who gave us a Florida emergency information line at 1-800-342-3557. I should write that down. 1-800-342-3557. The next update on where Irma is heading comes at 5 o'clock Eastern. It's now 3:33. We still don't know if we're evacuating, if we're going to stay here and, as they say, hunker down. And there's no way to, it's all a guess at this point which way to go. I mean, we're watching the different forecast tracks, and the most of them are now saying that the hurricane is going to trend toward the east coast of Florida. So we're thinking maybe we go up a little northwest in Florida, but it's all a crapshoot. So we'll see. It just so happens, I told you this yesterday, I booked a guest for today's show. We have a new update. David is walking in here, and it's showing it turning, going right up the east coast. Okay. Oh, and that's from Jim Cantore at the Weather Channel.
Yeah, all right. That's where the edge is.
Right, coming right up the east coast of the state. All right, here.
But it's also covering to the west coast.
Yes, well, that's the thing. It's such a big storm that it covers the entire state. Yep.
All the way up
past Tampa. Yeah, because the storm is huge. So I don't know what the ideal thing.
If that's the case, we may as well stay.
Yeah. David just said, if that's the case, we may as well stay. The thing is, you know, where we go, there's no safe place in Florida unless we, got in the car now and started driving north to not even Georgia, but further west. And who wants to go to Tennessee or Mississippi, Alabama? That's as scary as Irma. All right, let's take a break. I do have a guest coming up. His name is Sasha Abramski. He's been on the program before. I spoke to him about his last book, which was The American Way of Poverty. And this book, ironically enough, is called Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. At a time when we are all jumping out of our seats with so much fear, regardless whether it's North Korea or Irma or DACA, it's fear and more fear and more fear. The only thing that's missing are the color-coded terror alerts, right? That's what the Bush administration used to do. Anyway, we'll take a break, we'll do What's News, and come back on the other side with Sasha Abramski. Next, I'm Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com, and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hurricane Irma, the most powerful Atlantic Ocean hurricane in recorded history, passed almost directly over the island of Barbuda early Wednesday morning with 185 miles per hour winds, making a path toward Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Cuba, and a possible direct hit on South Florida, where I'm sitting right now. Irma is a large hurricane, roughly the size of the state of Ohio, and its hurricane-force winds could be felt over 50 miles from the center. The storm is expected to move west-northwest for the next 5 days. Then, this weekend, depending on the jet stream and other atmospheric conditions, Irma is forecast to turn north. The question is when that happens and whether it takes a path just off the east coast of Florida, up the center of the state, or a bit later into the eastern Gulf of Mexico. It's still too early to determine which scenario will occur. On Tuesday, the president rescinded the DACA program that protects immigrants brought illegally to the U.S. as children from deportation, delaying the implementation for 6 months and challenging Congress to do something about it before the deadline.
Every member of Congress should know that that is their duty, and we're asking them to fulfill it. It's pretty simple. I think that the American people elected them to do it. And again, if they can't, then they should get out of the way and let somebody else take their job that can actually get something done.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked in the daily briefing why Trump sent Attorney General Jeff Sessions out to make the announcement.
Why did the president not come out and make this announcement himself today? Why did he leave it to his attorney general? It's his decision. These kids in their lives are on the line because of what he's doing.
It's in large part a big part of the legal process. This was deemed illegal by, I think, just about every legal expert that you can find in the country, including many of Obama's own attorneys, said that this was not lawful program.
Right.
And therefore, it would be the Department of Justice to make a legal recommendation, and that's what they did.
On Tuesday night, Trump confused matters more by tweeting, "Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit this issue." We have no idea what revisit this issue means, but the New York Times reported that as late as 1 hour before the decision was to be announced, some in the administration privately expressed concern that Trump might not fully grasp the details of the steps he was about to take, and when he discovered their full impact, would change his mind. That attributed to a person familiar with their thinking. Jimmy Kimmel managed to find some humor in the situation.
The big story today, this morning, our president woke up and asked his staff, now that this hurricane is over, what's something horrible I can do to distract people from the Russia investigation? Someone said, you know, there are 800,000 innocent kids you could deport for no good reason. And he said, done and done. President Trump has decided to do away with what's known as the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, they call it. It's a program that gives undocumented immigrants whose parents brought them into the country when they were children the chance to work and go to school legally. And this is what he wants to do away with, mostly because President Obama is the one who ordered it. It seems like his main agenda is just to undo everything Obama did. I hope he doesn't bring Bin Laden back to life, because that's... These are American kids. Some of these kids have never visited the places they could get deported to. The president's spokesperson said it was a difficult decision. The president's been debating it for months. But ultimately, Donald Trump believes that if these kids want to be American, they have to do it the right way, by marrying Donald Trump. And that's as simple as that.
After delivering a statement at a tax reform meeting at the White House Tuesday afternoon, reporters asked about Trump's DACA decision.
Well, I have a great heart for the folks we're talking about, a great love for them. And people think in terms of children, but they're really young adults. I have a love for these people, and hopefully now Congress will be able to help them and do it properly. And I can tell you, in speaking to members of Congress, they want to be able to do something and do it right. And really, we have no choice. We have to be able to do something. And I think it's going to work out very well. And long term, it's going to be the right solution.
Reaction was strong. Former Presidents Clinton and Obama both issued statements condemning the move. Senator Lindsey Graham, who actually supported it, announced that he and Democrat Dick Durbin had introduced legislation to fix the problem.
To the DREAM Act population, there are a lot of people on the Republican side of the aisle understand your dilemma, and we want to find a fair solution. Because you have done nothing wrong. You came here as children. You've contributed to society. You have passed criminal background checks. You've demonstrated your ability to be beneficial to the country now in the future. The only thing that stands between you and certainty in your life is the Congress. That cannot be that reassuring. So here's the deal. The Congress is going to have to up his game.
Trump's decision to rescind DACA sparked protests outside of the White House in D.C. and Trump Tower in Manhattan on Tuesday. Protesters demonstrating against the DACA reversal blocked a busy intersection in Washington in front of the Justice Department, while police in New York attempted to move protesters from streets at protests outside Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue.
I got good news.
And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler, down here in South Florida, waiting for more updates on Irma. I'll continue with What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show from 3 to 4 Eastern while I still can. Support our work at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky?
But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Well, it's a timely guest. Sasha Abramski has actually been on the program before. A couple of years ago, he was here talking about his book, The American Way of Poverty. He's an author, journalist, lecturer, senior fellow at Demos, whose new book is called Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. And it is about fear. Hi, Sasha. Thanks for joining us again.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm right in the path of Hurricane Irma. So believe it or not, I'm a bit frightened at the moment.
You may have good reason.
Yeah, I think so. But you know what? Even before last week, safely out of the path of Hurricane Harvey, I was still frightened. I was frightened because we have a crazy man in the White House. I was frightened because of the scope of the storm that was hitting Texas and devastating Houston. I was frightened because of what's happening in North Korea. And then I took last week off. I had a staycation. I was going to sort of de-stress. And I started reading your book, Jumping at Shadows. And I got to tell you, it didn't help ease the stress at all. Because we are in a, I get that there is this culture of fear going on, but it's a time. And maybe the things that I'm afraid of are not necessarily the things that you wrote about. Maybe the things that you wrote about are more manufactured, irrational fears that some of us are feeling.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming back to what you were saying about the hurricane, there are many, many things in our world at the moment that merit a lot of fear. So one example would be these massive storms that are being exacerbated, according to most scientific analysis, by global warming. That's something that has the potential to impact many, many millions of people, to reshape the way we live our lives and so on. Another example you mentioned is North Korea. Now, you know, the very idea that the North Korean and American leaderships could be in a nuclear standoff, with both sides sort of banding about these cavalier threats to unleash hydrogen bombs, the most powerful weapons on Earth, against each other. Again, that actually merits legitimate fear, because if you start unleashing nuclear weapons, A, you're going to kill vast numbers of people. But the second thing is, more generally, you're going to really, really impact the environment of the entire planet. So there are things that we should be extraordinarily concerned about and putting in a ton of effort to try and mitigate. But then there are other things that tend to be either exaggerated or manufactured. So my book is really exploring what happens when we lose the ability to calculate, A, the scale of things that could happen, and B, the likelihood of those things happening. So what happens, for example, when there's an Ebola epidemic 7 or 8,000 miles away from the United States, and suddenly many, many millions of Americans are changing their travel plans? Now, logically, that doesn't really make sense. But when we're saturated with stories about Ebola, we start losing the ability to calibrate risk. Another example, people of my generation, I'm in my mid-40s, we all saw the movie Jaws when we were young kids. And you talk to, you know, it's a flippant thing, but it's actually serious. You talk to pretty much anyone in their 40s, and they'll tell you that they have a pretty healthy fear of swimming and of sharks.
Right.
But if you then say to them, well, you know, actually, there's a much, much greater likelihood that you're going to be either given a serious disease or killed by a tiny insect, a tick, or a mosquito, than you are by a shark. Well, we don't get nearly as scared of mosquitoes or ticks, even though they kill far more people. And I'd argue, at least in part, that's because there was never a Hollywood blockbuster about mosquitoes in the way there was about great white sharks.
That makes sense. That makes sense. You know, in the book, Jumping at Shadows, one of the first stories you tell is that of, and it's one I remember so clearly, a 14-year-old kid in Texas who happened to be a Muslim boy. I don't know if he was in high school or middle school, who built a clock, and he was so proud of it, and he was in the robotics program, and he brought it in, and he showed his teacher about this clock he built, and there was this massive outcry of, oh my God, he built a bomb. And even though they knew it wasn't a bomb, this was escalated to mammoth proportions.
It wasn't just an outcry. He brings in this clock and he says very clearly, I've built a clock. And he shows it to the teacher and he says, I've built a clock. And then he puts it in his bag and another teacher sees it and thinks that it's a bomb. It's a 14-year-old Muslim kid in a very conservative part of Texas, and the teacher leaps to this conclusion it's a bomb, and they call the principal, and the kid's taken into a room off to the side with the principal, the deputy principal, and several police officers, and they start interrogating him. They don't read him his rights. They don't bring in his parents. They start interrogating him, and the interrogation goes on for a long, long time, and they don't quite know what to do because they don't think it's a bomb, but on the other hand, the teacher had reported that here's this kid with this thing dangling wires, and they eventually decide to arrest him. And so this kid who had done nothing other than bring an engineering project to school is actually arrested, and he's basically facing all kinds of charges except for the fact that they don't know what to charge him with, because they can't charge him with bringing a bomb to school because it's not a bomb. So they think, well, maybe they can charge him with bringing a fake bomb to school. But it's hard to charge someone with bringing a fake bomb to school when he was very explicit in saying, I brought a clock to school. Mm-hmm. He didn't try to threaten anybody. He didn't try to pretend it was something it wasn't. And eventually the charges are dismissed, and it created a sort of national uproar. People like Steve Zuckerberg got involved in it. President Obama got involved. But this kid's life was ruined. The family ended up leaving the state. They started getting death threats. They started being called terrorists online. And all the kid had done was bring a clock to school. And so in my book, I explore what happens when we become so afraid of certain groups or certain characteristics that we immediately leap to the worst-case conclusion. So we immediately assume this kid, because he's Muslim, is a bomb maker. Right. We immediately assume that his family is out to terrorize America. In actual fact, he was just a kid with a clock. And you can see examples like this all over the country, and some of them are around religion, some of them are around race, some of them are around poverty, some of them are around migration. But you can see these examples where we exaggerate fears of certain kinds of people or certain kinds of action, and then we start making our political decisions around those fears. And, you know, obviously we're living in this extraordinarily demagogic moment where the President of the United States uses fear, doesn't try and tamp down fear. He tries to maximize the fear of his audience because he knows that if he uses fear, he can create a very conservative politics around that fear.
You know, but George Bush used fear as well and did it pretty effectively with his color-coded terror alerts and stuff. This, I think, is a different kind of animal that Trump is unleashing.
Yeah, I mean, in my book, I do talk about the color-coded alerts and so on. I don't think Trump's, by any stretch of the imagination, the first American or international politician to use fear. Politicians are very adept at using fear when it suits them. And not just Republican politicians. Bill Clinton mm-hmm. in the 1990s, for example, was very good at using fear of crime to political impact. Where Trump's different is the fact that he's creating an entire political movement based about sort of opportunistic dipping into different fears. And it almost doesn't matter what the fear is. So one day Trump can be addressing an anti-vaccine audience, and suddenly he believes that vaccinations are a medical conspiracy. And the next day he might be addressing a crowd which is deeply fearful of immigrants, and suddenly all immigrants are rapists and drug dealers right. and other forms of criminal. And it is the consistency with which Trump uses fear as a political instrument that's different. And I think it's that consistency that really puts him in a class by himself in American political history. We've had demagogues before, Senator Joe McCarthy in the 1950s or Governor Huey Long out of Louisiana in the 1930s. But we've never had somebody in the top office in the land who is that willing to use fear for demagogic purposes. I actually started writing the book before Trump declared his candidacy. I started researching it in 2014. And it seems to me that a lot of what Trump's doing is liberating these sort of strains of fear in our culture. They've always been there, and they've gotten sort of more pronounced with the rise of social media and other amplifiers. But Trump has basically put them on steroids. And so now what you're seeing is all these different kinds of fear coming together in the form of a single political person and his movement. What worries me is that this actually has the potential to absolutely remake not just American politics, but American society, that we're in this moment where we could trade in a whole bunch of liberties for the illusion of security, that we could trade in a whole bunch of civil protections, again, for this illusion that Trump dangles out to his audience. I think it's a very dangerous moment politically.
It definitely is. And a big part of it, and one of the more frightening elements, frankly, is that much of what he says and does is based on the phenomena of gaslighting. He tells us things that he hears from Fox so-called news, and that's his intelligence source. And so he's putting out false information that he hears from a fake news outlet and presenting it as fact and acting on it as if this is what's real. And so nothing makes sense. And to me, that is incredibly frightening.
Well, yes. I mean, this idea that the president of the United States would be recycling either deliberately or by accident falsehoods, whether it's descriptions of terrorist attacks in Kentucky that never occurred, mm-hmm. or whether it's ideas of, treason that never took place amongst the Democratic Party, or whether it's the birther lie, the idea that former President Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States. There's a willingness to basically, as I said, dip into anything that's politically convenient, no matter the consequence. And that really does create a dangerous moment. And I think, you know, in the 1980s and 90s, local TV news would always overplay crime. And there was this sort of axiom, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. That even if it wasn't sort of particularly significant as a news story, if the local news could find a story that had lots of blood and gore, it would guarantee an audience. And I think the update to that is if it scares, it blares. And it's the same principle. If we can scare an audience, well, then let's highlight it. Let's trumpet it as much as we can, because it's guaranteed to generate revenues, guaranteed to generate eyes and ears, and that's good for business. And so you do see this phenomenon now where we look for worst-case scenarios. We look for the anomalies rather than the pattern. And we base our political decision-making increasingly on those anomalies. So, you know, whether it's how we parent our children, whether it's how we respond to disease outbreaks, whether it's how we respond to all the complexities of immigration, whether it's how we respond to terrorism, we look for anomalies and then we craft public policy. And if we have political leaders willing to stoke that, if we have political leaders who, instead of stepping up and say, look, let's think this through responsibly and carefully, let's add nuance to public discourse, if instead you have leaders who dispense with nuance and who really essentially just grab onto anything that can get them a headline, well, then we're at a moment where it becomes increasingly difficult to make rational public policy decisions. And that's the kind of moment we're in, where we can have all the signs of climate change, these massive hurricanes, the melting of the glacier ice shelves and so on, and yet we can have a government that no longer believes in climate change. You can have all of the evidence you like that having semi-automatic weaponry widely available as a recipe for bloodshed, mm-hmm. and yet we have a political party wedded to the idea that the more gun ownership, the better. And so I think that unless we get a handle on this, unless we work out ways to separate out reasonable fears from irrational fears, unless we get a handle on how we work out reasonable calculations of risk versus unreasonable calculations of risk, there's a real danger that it becomes increasingly difficult to have rational public policy debate. It just all becomes about emotion and spectacle.
And that's it seems to be the point where we're at. You also, Sasha Abramsky is with us. The new book is Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. You know, maybe it is the end of the American dream. It certainly is, or it seems that way this week for the dreamers. They've got rational fear now that these people came out of the shadows and registered to be able to move forward with their lives. And now it looks like the Trump administration is going to weaponize the registration lists and use that to go after these kids and their families. That's a rational fear.
Absolutely. And if you are one of those young adults, you would have every reason to feel completely and utterly betrayed by what's happening, because these are people who did nothing wrong. I mean, however you define it, whether or not you think that anyone who's an adult and of volition, you know, if they cross the border illegally, should immediately be taken back, mm-hmm. you know, whatever one thinks about how we enforce immigration laws, these are people who were brought over as children. They didn't choose to come. They were brought over as children. They have made lives in this country. Oftentimes, they have no memory of the countries from which they came, and certainly right. no sort of social networks to go back to. This is their home. And now they are being told, because you came out of the shadows and because you did all the things you were told you should do, which enabled you to get jobs or to enroll in university or whatever it might be, because you come out of the shadows, you're now peculiarly vulnerable to the full might and fury of the federal administration. And that's a terrifying prospect. And if I were one of those young adults, I would feel terrified by what's happening. And, you know, it strikes me that when we start going down a path where we demonize entire groups, we say, all right, you, because of where you came from, are inherently bad. Or you, because of the color of your skin, are inherently bad. Or you, because of the religion you adhere to, are inherently bad. When we go down those byways, nothing good comes of it. We darken our culture, we darken our politics, we make our society more violent, we make our society more disposed to accepting the might of the state being used against individuals. Mm-hmm. And that's the path of totalitarianism. And I think that totalitarian regimes throughout the last century have used fear of individuals and fear of groups to manipulate publics into accepting agendas. And right. I think we're seeing this again now, that fear is being used very effectively as a political weapon.
I think we are, too, and that gives us more reason to be afraid. The book is Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. Sasha Abramsky, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I always really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure, and I wish you luck with the hurricane.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, and with that, we are done, and unfortunately done for the week. I will not be here tomorrow or Friday because I will be dealing with Hurricane Irma. Thanks for bearing with me during this time. I planned on a whole week of shows, and hopefully I'll be back on Tuesday, dry and safe and sound. If you want to help support us, NicoleSandler.com/donate is where all the information is. And again, if you're in Florida or anywhere along the path of the storm, you stay safe too. We'll see you next week, I hope. Thanks again.